Part of that is just, part of it's just decor. And I know that that may sound kind of silly, but what it looks like is it looks like, hey, we're investing in this place because we see that, that God is up to something. So anyway, right before I came in the room, I was given a brief tour of the nursery that is still kind of like it's we're getting there to the end of getting it back into fighting shape, and some new decor in there that just looks amazing. And so that's kind of what I was excited about. There's also you've seen probably little things here and there, and some of them you may have smiled at, and some of them you may have chuckled at a little bit. There's one that's given me a little bit of a chuckle, and this is pertinent, so just hang with me. The little restroom off the gym here, right? If you've used it and you pay attention, you notice there's a new sign on the wall. New sign says something along the lines of, everyone wants to change the world, but nobody wants to change the toilet paper roll. Be the change. Right? Be the change. And while that's sort of it's cute, it's funny, it's kind of silly, the person who put it up was like, is this appropriate enough? Is this okay? I was like, I think it's hilarious. And honestly, a good reminder. Honestly, shock value sometimes has value. But change is actually one of those vital pieces of who we are as God's people that I think sometimes we lose sight of or even try to avoid. Because change is not usually a fun process. Change is not usually a comfortable process. Change almost always takes some work and some sacrifice and giving something up in order to gain something else. I was reminded recently that when a caterpillar becomes a butterfly, it's not like the caterpillar like wraps a cocoon around himself and then just sprouts wings. Like that caterpillar just it creates a chrysalis and then just turns to goo inside. You realize that? Just turns liquid, and then comes out as a butterfly. And it's just like, guys, that's what change takes a lot of times, and that's not fun. Nobody wants to just have everything dissolve around them. But sometimes the change that we need to go through as God's people, whether it's as a community, a corporate community, or as an individual, it takes that kind of just complete release to God. Saying, you know what, if it dissolves me completely, if it changes me radically, if it changes the things that I value, if it changes even sometimes my interest, then God, fine, do it. Do what you need to do. And we see this. We see Jesus engage with people. I love one of the things that we learn from Jesus' engagement in the Gospels with individuals is that he really never deals with two different people in the exact same way. We can see that even in his healing ministry. Like, go through and watch. And just take, this is a really easy example, a really good one to find. Go through and find all the examples where Jesus heals a person of blindness. And one of the things you'll find is that every time he heals somebody of blindness, he does it differently than he did the last time. And differently than he will the next time. And it just shows you that Jesus sees people as individuals. He does the same thing in his calling of the disciples. The first four get a real similar calling because they're in a real similar situation. Then he goes to Matthew, and Matthew gets kind of an entirely different calling. Andrew gets a different calling. Philip and Nathaniel get different callings. Andrew's there with Simon. And so you just see him work with individuals. And so we'll do that too in his teaching. And you have one guy, and he's the one that kind of rang in my mind when I was prepping this passage. You have this one young guy, and he comes to Jesus in kind of the height of Jesus' ministry. And he's like, I want to follow you. And what we learn from the gospel writer is this young guy wasn't just a young guy, he was a rich and powerful young guy. He had influence, and he had money, and he had a lot of stuff behind him. And he comes to Jesus, and he's like, okay, I can see that what you're teaching is good. And he sort of tries to flatter him, and Jesus calls him out for that, which is solid. But he also, he says, what can I do? Because you're talking about being right with God. What do I do to be right with God? Okay, fine. Jesus says, keep the commandments. And when this young man hears the commandments, the things that pop into his head are what we think of. Like, we hear commandments, a lot of times we think Ten Commandments. You know, we go to the, we'll call it the Decalogue, or the Ten Commandments in Exodus and then in Leviticus. Like, okay, love Lord, or honor God, keep his name holy, down the list, don't bear false witness, do not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, all of that. You know, okay, those ten, sure. But he probably also heard, okay, there are all the other commandments in the Old Testament, of which there are several hundred, and I don't remember the number right now. And then he also probably thought of what was being taught by the rabbis at the time, and that number gets to be pretty high. And yet still his response is, I've done this. I've kept the commandments. And Jesus references directly some of the Ten Commandments in that conversation. He says, I've done this. I've kept this commandment since I was a boy. That's the way I was taught. And then what Jesus says to him is, well, here's what you're lacking. What you're lacking is not religion, for sure. What you're lacking is you are a little stuck in what you like and what you're comfortable with and what you're used to. So you, and he doesn't say this to everyone around him. He doesn't say the same command to everyone. He says to this individual, he says, you specifically need to go sell all your possessions, give that money to the poor, and then come follow me. And that's a step this young man just can't bring himself to take. Because that is so far out of his comfort zone. That's so much radical change. That's that total dissolution of who he thinks of himself as being. But he just can't take that step. And now, you know, we don't take a passage like that and say, oh, God's calling all of us to do exactly those things. Because, I mean, by ancient standards, we're all pretty wealthy. But we do take that and say, wait a minute. Are there places where I'm being challenged into change that would better reflect who Jesus is and what Jesus has done in my life, where I'm maybe not affecting those changes, where I'm not seeing it happen? And actually, we need to get together on this too, and I'll kind of draw that out here in a minute, but as we move in a little further into 1 John chapter 2, as we walk together in this, as we're being in light, we have to understand that walking with Jesus is a process of being changed and seeing change. Being changed in that he is doing radical things in us, and we need to yield to those things. Seeing change in ourselves, in one another, in the community that we're part of. Change is actually an integral part of what it means to be with Jesus, what it means to walk with Jesus, what it means to belong to Jesus. And in these couple of verses, we'll see just some specific ways. But anyway, we're in 1 John chapter 2. We're going to pick it up in verse 3. We'll read just a handful of verses here. If you've got a Bible, you can go there with me, or you'll see it up on the screen. By this we know that we've come to know him, if we keep his commandments. The one who says, I have come to know him, and does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. The one who says he abides, By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for inspiring men like John to write down your truth and then preserving it for us. We need it. We still need it. It's a couple thousand years later, and we need it just as badly as this young church did. So teach us and change us and help us to see how necessary change is. Even if it's difficult, even if it's painful, even if we don't like it. Because ultimately, that's evidence of you at work. We want to see you at work. I want to see you at work in my life. I want to see you at work in my family. I want to see you at work in this church. I want to see you at work in this community. But it's going to have to start with letting you change me. Spirit of truth, guide us in all truth and present. Amen. We are being changed and we are seeing change. And first of all, because the fact of the matter is, knowing Jesus changes you. Knowing Jesus changes you. And if it hasn't changed you, you don't know it. That's really what John comes down to what he says. By this we know that we have come to know, same verb, by the way, present tense, by this we are knowing, present tense, that we have come to know, perfect tense. There's a resulting state of now I really, truly, truly do know him. If we keep his commandments. John lays that out. This is actually a standard test. John says, if you really know Jesus, your behavior will change. You will keep his commandments. And again, I mean, I'll bring you back just to the kind of the setting of John's letter. He's dealing with this this heresy we call Gnosticism. Gnosticism is essentially espousing within the church, hey, we're a group within the church. We are better than you are because we have this special knowledge or gnosis. Is the Greek word. We have this special gnosis that allows us to understand God differently than you do, and so our behavior doesn't matter. All that matters is our spiritual state. We can live however we want to, and yet we are still totally in Jesus because our physical lives and our spiritual lives do not interact with one another. And John is dealing with that heresy, and he's actually dealing with it. It's kind of one of his primary things in 1 John. And he keeps using words very intentionally that are going to grab that group's attention or the attention of anyone who's heard that group teach their false teachings. And so he uses words like no, or in this case, I mean, it's built from that same Greek word, gnosis. And it's a verb form of it. But by this, we are knowing, we are having the knowledge, that we have experienced a knowledge of him, in this case, i.e. Jesus. We know that we've come to know him if we live the way he told us to live. So in this direct context, he says to these individuals who say, okay, we know this special thing about Jesus that y'all don't know. He says, okay, if you know this special thing about Jesus, then what we should see and what you should see is that you live a life in line with what he commanded. And yet we know historically that these folks who claimed that special knowledge, by and large, did not live a life that reflected Jesus' commandments. Matter of fact, it, a lot of times, looked the very opposite. Because they wanted to indulge the flesh, and yet they wanted to have kind of a spiritual assurance and a spiritual authority. We still do it, right? We live a way that's kind of like, you know what? I'm glad I have Jesus. I'm glad that Jesus forgives me my sin, but on a daily basis, in and out, I don't really think about what he wants from me. I'm not really concerned with what he wants from me. I'm not really concerned with changing my life. I'm just concerned with, when I die, will Jesus let me into heaven? That's about it. Which is a fundamental misunderstanding, not only of what it means to know Jesus, as John is getting at, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of eternal life in heaven, too. Because the fact is, the life that Jesus gives us is one that here and now is a life that reflects heavenly principles. And then continues into eternity in God's presence. It's not like, oh, if Jesus saves me, then you know whatever this life looks like is whatever, and then anything takes a radical shift when I get to heaven. Will there be a radical shift when we walk into glory in God's presence? Yes, I think there will be, but it won't be inconsistent. What we should see is something along the lines of, you know, we're becoming more like Jesus, we're reflecting God's character more and more, and then. That moment where we step into glory, whether it's by Jesus' return or our death or whatever it looks like, we step into glory and there's a massive shift, but it's the same trajectory, right? And that's really the biblical picture of what eternal life or life under the ages, or what John uses zoe, that Greek term zoe, life. That's really what it looks like. And so when John looks at these folks who say, hey, I know Jesus. Oh yeah, I know Jesus. I know all about Jesus. I know him really well. And yet their lives don't reflect his character or his commandments. He says to them, but this is how you know that you know him. If you want to be sure that you know him, this is what you're looking for. And so we get that question too. Like, do I really know Jesus? Or, okay. Is your life reflecting him more and more? I'm not saying you don't have moments where it's like, oh man, I messed up. I'm not saying you don't even have whole seasons where it's like, oh man, I messed up. We're going to. It's about overall trajectories. It's about this present iterative tense that John is using very intentionally, is if we keep his commandments. He doesn't say if we kept his commandments, and he could use aorist there and not really made any reference to a time situation. Just like general idea, he kept the commandments. He could have used a perfect tense or an imperfect tense and said, if in the past we can see that you have kept his commandments, then we know that you know him. He could have used the future tense and said, if you will keep his commandments, if you'll work towards a change eventually. One day, when you don't have these other worries like keeping my job or not upsetting people or honestly, I want to have some fun right now, you know, then we'll know that, you know, he uses the present tense, and I think very intentionally. Because if you're keeping, if this is the habit of your life, to say, hey, this is what Jesus taught, and it's what he's calling me to. The fact of the matter is, if you know Jesus, knowing Jesus changes you. And it's not a can change you or might change you or could change you. It's not even a will change you, because it does change you. That's the thing that John points out here. He's like, do you want to know if you know Jesus? Do you want to know, honestly, if somebody else knows Jesus? Then what you're looking for is not, I can make the statement I know Jesus, or I can make the statement I know about Jesus, or I can run down the Bible with you and teach you all these doctrines. It's a question of, do I see his character, his commandments, reflected in my life, in your life? Because knowing Jesus inherently has to change you. If it hasn't changed you, The message that John has for you right here is that you don't know him. And that's not a, thing you can't come back from. If it hasn't changed you, and I'm not saying if it hasn't made you perfect yet. I'm saying if it hasn't changed you. If it hasn't changed the way you look at the world. If it hasn't changed the way you see other people. If it hasn't changed the way you think about other people or situations. If your worldview, your idea of reality matches someone who doesn't know Jesus, if you can say, oh yeah, this all looks, life's going down the drain and there's nothing behind it and there's no purpose and all I'm going to do is work and die and that's it and the best thing I can hope for is to lay aside enough money for my kids to have a good life. If that's seriously it, then guys, knowing Jesus hasn't changed you yet. Because while, hard work is valuable and while setting something aside for your kids is a good thing, leaving a legacy, nothing wrong with that, that's not the end all be all. Jesus changes you in such a way that you see behind the curtain now. You see eternity and reality. You realize that God's doing something. You realize that even though stuff sometimes goes downhill and we see a lot of evil in the world, that God is up to something and ultimately in the end, he will fix it. You'll remember that it's God's world. If your worldview is predicated on, oh man, we have to have this political party in power or everything's terrible, Jesus needs to change that. And if he's not changing that, then there's probably an issue there. If your life is completely founded on, we go around the sun and, we got so many trips and then we're done. So cram as much in as you can, experience everything, have fun. Don't worry about what other people think in the sense of, if you think what I'm doing is immoral, I don't care. Morals are just social constructs anyway. That's not the commandments or the character of Jesus. If you know Jesus, not know about him or know of him, but if you know him, it changes you. John makes that pretty clear. He goes on. Loving Jesus changes you. So here's the thing. We're going through a couple of issues here, and we're going to link them back. I'm going to give you a little preview. Over the next 4 weeks, this week included, so this week and three more, we're going to see three essentially tests of do you know Jesus, right? And the first one here is the moral test. Has he changed your character? We're also going to get into a doctrinal test, what you believe, and we're going to get into a social test, actually the social test and then the doctrinal test. A social test of how you interact with other people, right? And in the midst of it, why it's the next 3 weeks, not the next 2 weeks after this, in the midst of it, John has this little excursus on what the church looks like in the midst of that and kind of some reassurance for the people he's writing to. So I'll steal my own thunder a little bit, and in a couple of weeks we're going to see where John says, hey, step back for a second. In case you think true believers that I'm really coming down hard on you and telling you none of you actually know Jesus, I'm not saying that. I'm making sure you have these tools in front of you so that you can look at your own life and look at the community and make these assessments. So again, kind of stole my own thunder a bit. We'll get there. Don't worry. But in this moral test, that first thing is knowing Jesus. The second one is loving Jesus. And what we're doing within this moral test is that knowing Jesus is, okay, you can have a mental agreement with the doctrines of Christianity. It doesn't necessarily mean you know Jesus. It just means that you know about Jesus and what he teaches. If it hasn't changed you to live what he teaches, you don't know him. So if you really know him, if you have a relationship with him, if you've engaged with him and not just his teachings, those will change you. Okay, so that's a mental one. The next one here is like kind of the emotional situation. It's the experiential situation. Loving Jesus changes you. And I mean, human beings love emotional stimulation, okay? Which is a good thing. Like, we were built for it. You understand that? We were built with emotions intentionally. So we tend to crave emotional stimulation. That's why nobody likes a movie that doesn't get you excited or sad or anything. Nobody. I mean, if it's just like, if there are no highs and lows in the movie, nobody watches the movie. What's the point? Right? We want a movie that's going to excite us with the action or break our hearts with a love story that just doesn't quite work out. Or we want that emotional pull, right? Or we want the feel good. My wife loves the cheesy, not so much. They're changing in not good ways. My wife loves the cheesy Hallmark movies. And I give her grief. I'm like, you know what's going to happen. She says, I know what's going to happen. I don't care. But we want that emotional engagement. We do the same thing in our spiritual lives. We love those emotional moments. We love the highs and the lows. You know, we send teenagers to youth group and off to youth retreats and youth camps where they have these great emotional highs, and we hope that that'll change them forever. And sometimes it does, but sometimes it's just an emotional high, and you come back and it's like, man. We love, you know, we'll go to worship conferences as adults and say, oh man, this amazing spiritual high moment, but were we just chasing that high, that emotional engagement, or was there something more? And that's kind of where John's going right now. Loving Jesus, he says, is going to change you. It's not just going to excite you. It's not going to get you revved up for a moment. It's going to change you over the course of your life. And so he lays out a two-sided test here. Picking up in verse 4. The one who says, I've come to know him. So he lays out this, and there's this switch here. He goes between the plural and the singular. So he says, okay, here's the general idea with the plural. Here's the principle. Here's a specific application. He switches to this hypothetical singular. The one who's saying, I've come to know him, who is willing to make the statement, I know Jesus. And he does use, again, he uses that verb that's built off the same gnosis root of knowing. It's the one who says, I have come to know him. Not know about him, but know him. But doesn't keep his commandments is a liar. And the truth is not in him. It's like, so he can say all he wants about it, but if he doesn't, then it's a lie to begin with. But see the second half of this. Second half of verse 5, but whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. And this is, so scholars will agree, grammar lesson you don't need, but that's okay. That construction, love of God, is genitive construction in the original language, don't worry about that. To say this, that the use of the genitive in this case is what they call a subjective genitive. What they mean by that is, and some translations do this for you, in him, his love for God. So while in English that could be generic enough to be like, oh, that could be God's love in us, and really it could be in Greek too, but context gives us clues to tell us how the genitive is being used there. That could be God's love for us, or that could be love that is characterized, you know, it's the same kind of love that God has. What John intends here, scholars are in pretty solid agreement, is the love that the individual has for God is perfected, or has been brought, not to perfection necessarily in our sense of, oh, there's nothing wrong with it, but completion, has come about to the purpose that it was aimed for. And that's the root of the word there for perfect, too, is reaching towards the goal. Your love for God has reached its goal, not in an emotional moment, and not in being able to say, I've come to know him, but in your life being changed. Whoever keeps his word, whoever keeps his commands, whoever does the things that Jesus leads us to, he is the one who has actually experienced what it means to love Jesus. She's the one who actually knows what loving Jesus looks like. Not the person who gets super emotional in worship if they're not the same person. Might be the person who gets super emotional when singing songs of worship. And also, we see that his or her life reflects the commandments and the character of Jesus. But the person who gets super emotional during the worship song and then walks out the door and doesn't live anything like what Jesus looks like is the person that John's warning right here. Saying, yeah, that doesn't work. If you get really excited when we have a rally for Jesus' sake and like, oh man, Jesus is at work and God's doing things and you love that excitement and the praises and like, man, see this happening, or you know, whatever you pump that into, whatever you pour that into, but when you leave that moment, the excitement doesn't carry itself into, hey, God's calling me to something bigger and better, and your life doesn't look like his anymore. And then John is warning you, you're on the other side of this. You're on the first half of this, the one who says, I've come to know him, but doesn't keep his commandments. He's a liar and the truth is not in him. But if you want to be the second half of this, you want to be in first half of verse 5 here. Whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God, his love for God has been truly perfected. Essentially, John says this, he's like, don't tell me you love Jesus. Don't tell me you love Jesus if your life doesn't look like you love Jesus. And it doesn't have to be super weepy and emotional all the time. It's not that at all, actually. It's saying, hey, emotions are great. Engage your emotions in your discipleship process. And we see them. We see the 12 engaging their emotions in the discipleship process. I mean, John is standing at the foot of the cross, like, terrified, right? Peter's so scared he's taken off. He's so worried in that moment that he lies because his emotions are engaged in this whole thing. And he's so upset the first time he, that's really not the first time, but when he really understands who Jesus is, that moment in his boat where he's taught nothing, right? And Jesus says, hey, can I preach from your boat? And he says, sure. He says, go out of the ways. And he preaches from the boat. And then he tells Peter, let down your net. Peter's like, I haven't caught anything all night. Do it anyway. He brings up this massive catch that he can't bring in. There's this emotional response from Peter. He falls to his knees in the midst of the flopping fish. And he says, go away from me. I'm a sinful man. Right? It's an emotional response. We see Peter's emotions engaged. And that's not a thing where Jesus says, dude, calm down. Calm down. All right? Get yourself under control. Compose yourself. That's not what he says. This is his coming. Coming. And neither does he say to like a Matthew, who doesn't appear to engage very emotionally with Jesus. He doesn't say, dude, Matthew, you gotta whip the emotions up a little bit. Like, you're way too stoic for me. Just come follow me. It's a personality differences, right? Those are good things. But if emotionally you're like, oh, I'm so in love with Jesus, but your life doesn't reflect the commandments of Jesus. That's where John's going to come at you now and say, hey, look, guys, this doesn't work. Those two things can't be together. If you're going to say you love him, loving Jesus has to change you. It just does change you. And it's not something you have to work for. It's not like, oh, man, I love Jesus. So, okay, white knuckle through this. I'm going to change because I love Jesus. I'm going to prove my love to Jesus by changing for him. Okay? That's called religion and legalism. Where we say, I'm going to force myself into these moral behaviors to prove my love for Jesus. That's actually not the point that John's making. The point that John is making is if you really do love Jesus, it just does change you. And it doesn't make you perfect automatically. It doesn't like all of a sudden, like you never sin, you never fail to meet Jesus' commandments, you never fail to meet Jesus' standards. It's just like something changes in you. It's like, I want something different than I used to. And it may be a long time ago for you to realize, you know, like, I gave my heart to Jesus when I was like 6. Okay? And some people are like, oh, childhood confession doesn't, you know, I don't know if it matters or not. It mattered. Okay? That was me, and I gave my life to Jesus in that moment. About 7 years later, I had a real serious conversation with Jesus about how I really did think he had my heart, but I really wasn't living like it. And it's been an ongoing process my entire life. Okay? That at 13 there, I didn't suddenly become a perfect Christian. I thought maybe I might, like, after high school, and I didn't. And I thought maybe I might after college, and I didn't. And I really thought for sure I would when I was called into my first pastor. I'm like, okay, now my Christian life is really going to be, like, amazing. And it still wasn't because it's still on this upward trajectory, guys. All right? And it's still going to be. But that's what it looks like when you love Jesus, is, like, the change continues to happen. And, you know, dips on that. But when you love Jesus, it changes you just inherently. All right? So loving Jesus changes you. Knowing Jesus changes you. Abiding in Jesus changes you. I love this phrase, abiding in. This is something that a friend brought to me not too long ago. Actually, it's been over a year now. He said, hey, this needs to be, he said, this is something God's put on my heart. I'll share it with you to see if it grabs you the way it grabbed me. And he took me back to John 15 and the story of Jesus tells, the parable he tells, the vine and the branches. He said, I'm the vine and the branches. If you're going to survive this life, basically, if you're going to survive this being my disciple thing, all of that has to come from me. If you're going to produce fruit as a disciple, if you're going to look like you belong to me, the only way that's going to happen is if you're drawing nutrients from me, the way the branch of a grapevine draws nutrients from the vine itself and then produces the grapes. Right? That's just abiding in. So, I mean, John has used this language before in his gospel. It's something that is kind of near and dear to his heart. But he goes on here, and this is our last, the last little test here within these triple tests, within the one test. By this we know that we're in him. What's coming up? What's following here? The one who says he abides in him. Okay, so it's one thing to say, oh, I abide in Jesus. I live in Jesus. My life is found in Jesus. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. And we've been overwalked here so many times, I know you're sick of it. Peripateto here is to live your life in this way. It's not a literal, like, taking steps forward. So the one who says he abides in him ought to live in the same manner that he lived, exhibit the same character that he exhibited. Because when you actually are abiding in Jesus, when you're drawing your life from Jesus, then that's what flows out of you. That changes you. It's New Testament uses a lot of agrarian illustrations, and it talks about it talks about an olive tree when it talks about the people of God sometimes. So Israel being considered a cultivated olive, and then Paul actually uses this illustration. This is branches of a wild olive were brought and grafted in to the cultivated olive, and he's referring to the coming of the Gentiles and the people of God through the blood of Jesus. Pretty cool stuff. Neat theology. I'm more familiar with apple trees just because where I grew up, we had two apple trees in our backyard. Apple trees were a big thing in my area because we liked to, where I grew up in Northwest Ohio, we like to really claim that, you guys probably don't even know who Johnny Appleseed was, but that Johnny Appleseed spent some time in our area, and historically he did, so everyone who has an apple tree likes to claim, yeah, it's a Johnny Appleseed apple tree. I don't know if ours were or not, they probably weren't. What I do know is this. Of these two apple trees that we had one over on this side of the backyard, and it was relatively short and kind of gnarled, had a really thick trunk. It was a great climbing tree, but the apples were not good. I mean, like, you could bake with them. They were really good baking apples, but they were not good eating apples. Kind of mushy and mealy, and not good for eating off the tree. Over the other corner of the yard was a much thinner, spindlier apple tree, and its apples were so good. So good. They were so good, in fact, that when it started to get old and it rotted at the base and it started to break off, my dad went out with a 2x4 crutch that he built for it and propped it up. And it stayed propped up like that for probably another 10 years until finally it completely gave way and broke off of the stump. And that was kind of a sad day. Such good apples. And then from the stump, another tree started to grow. And this is after I've gone to college by this point, when it got mature enough that it actually bore some apples. It's like, hey, look, it's giving apples. It's like, they're a different color. Oh, they don't taste anything. Like, these are not great apples. How on earth is this tree? Why? Because the tapped in branch was creating something different. And it's drawing its source from somewhere else. And I just kind of like you can produce something of your own. And it could be good or it could be bad. But if it's bad, maybe it's because you're not pulling from the right spot. And this is where Jesus takes us. He's like, you're a branch, okay? If you don't have nutrients, even if you can't produce your own nutrients, I guess that's really where I'm going. You can't produce your own source of nutrition to actually make this happen. You want it to happen, you draw it out of me. But what happens is when you draw it out of me, it changes who you are. One who sent me by is ought to walk in the same manner. He takes it back, and it takes me back to John 15. He's just like, look, you want to live this? You want to be different? You want to be changed? I'm going to tell you how it happens. It happens because you draw it from me. And you draw it from me by instead of saying, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to white knuckle through this. And we go from that emotional, or from that mental test to that emotional test, to finally this one, which is kind of like a source, a lifestyle sort of test. What's important to you? What fuels you? Does you fuel you? Does your desires fuel you? The desires of Jesus fuel you? Do your hopes and dreams fuel you? Or does Jesus' calling fuel you? And what's really cool, it's one of the things I love about Jesus so much, is that sometimes you get to be like that, and not that Jesus apples are ever bad, but you get to be like that grafted in tree, where it's like, I have these desires and hopes and dreams, and Jesus says, yes, I put those in on purpose. We're going to produce from those desires and those hopes and those dreams, but on my fuel, not yours. And sometimes he changes it. Sometimes he grabs you and says, nah, we're going a different direction here. All right, I know like this excites you, but it's off kilter, and we're going to redirect that a little bit. But either way, I promise you this. If you tell me, yes, I'm in Jesus, I'm trusting Jesus with my life, I've trusted him to save me, if you tell me that, and what comes out of your life doesn't look like him, John makes it pretty clear, that doesn't work. And it's not a question of you're not trying hard enough, it's a question of are you actually sourcing from him? Or are you sourcing from somewhere? And so we have these three things that kind of come together and say, okay, the change, What happens in me? It's not something I force. It's not like something I can study myself into, although study is good. It's not something I can emotionally hype myself into, although God engages our emotions on purpose. It's not something I can fall back on myself to make happen. But it's something that just happens when I actually have a relationship where I know who Jesus, not just know who Jesus is, but I know him as a person. It's something that happens when I don't just love what Jesus can do for me and don't get emotional about Jesus, but actually I've come to realize that he made me to love him and be in relationship with him. It's very intentional. It's something that happens when instead of saying, oh, I can do this, I step back and I realize I need Jesus to do this. But I want to be his instrument. I want to be his tool. And if those things don't result in change, then really what John's saying is those things don't happen. They haven't happened. And the reason I wanted to point out the community aspect of this is, and I'm extrapolating a little bit here from what John said, but I want us to go here. These are great for myself. These are great for me to be like, okay, here's my own self-check. But it's hard to be objective sometimes when it's me. So really what I ultimately need to see if I'm growing in these ways is a community of believers who will come alongside and say, John, I see that in you. Okay? I'm going to tell you something, though. You guys don't know about me or about one another. We don't know if knowing Jesus and loving Jesus and abiding in Jesus has changed me over the course of the last 6 months or a year unless we actually engage with one another. And it can't just be here. Because for 2 hours on Sunday morning, I can put on whatever front I want to put on, whatever front I need to put on. We all know that. If you've been in church for any part of your life, you know full well. You go to church on Sunday morning, you can make everything look great. You can have a family that's screaming at each other in the car. You walk in the door, and all of a sudden everyone's a perfect angel. You know that can happen. You can put on any front you want, you need for 2 hours. You cannot keep it up if someone is in and out, is engaging in your life with you on a regular basis. Seeing you in more than just an organized church context. Spending time, whether it's hanging out or having conversations or sitting down for coffee, because the more you talk, the more stuff starts to come out, right? Jesus says this too, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Okay, the more you talk, the more you engage, the more your real self comes out. And so what do? We avoid those, because I might say something that embarrasses me. I'm going to tell you right now, for this stuff to really work, we have to embarrass ourselves once in a while. I have to be in a position where something can slip out of my mouth that I really would have rather kept quiet so that the person there with me is like, John, not in a shaming way, not in an abusing way, not in a, oh, you naughty boy, but a, hey, let's talk about that a little bit. Where does that come from? It has to happen. That's how a church becomes healthy. That's how a Christian grows. That's what it looks like. I'm not saying it's always fun or comfortable. Sometimes it's really uncomfortable. Sometimes it's like, I don't want to have those conversations. That's not really about what I want. It's about what Jesus is calling me to. It's about what Jesus is calling us to. It's about the fact that he's calling us to this life because then we can be an extension of who he is, bringing hope and light into a world that needs it so badly. I'm going to tell you this. This world does not need another social club where you fake it till you make it for a while. Or fake it and don't care about making it. It doesn't need that. What this world needs is the gospel of Jesus that redeems and changes us and brings us back into relationship with our Creator and real community that cares about one another. That's what this world needs. Jesus wants to make us healthy so that we can be a better extension of who he is to bring that change, that gospel change, that redemption into the world around us. Anything less is actually less than the Great Commission. It's less than the calling on the church. It's being less than the church. It's being like church light or church club. I don't want to be that. I really don't. I want us to do these things. I want us to see them in one another. I want us to exhort one another along that path to go a little further. I want to be able to say of one another, like, hey, here's a man that I really respect that really needs to show leadership Like, I recognize his leadership in this church. I want to say, hey, here's a woman who really has Jesus' heart. I really hope she can pass on what she knows and her experience with Jesus to others. But we can't do that unless we're actually knowing it, unless we're seeing and experiencing it. But that's the change that we're called to. That's the change that knowing Jesus and loving Jesus and inviting Jesus brings. That's the change we get to see in one another. And it all leads us to a change that we claim we want to see in the world, where people come to know Jesus. It all goes that same direction. Heavenly Father, hard callings here. Ones I don't know.